I know I feel better overall when I get outside and I get active. But when I don't have the right gear, especially when the weather is unpredictable this spring, it's harder to live that life that I really want. And that's why I'm sort of obsessed now with my Vessi shoes. I have two pairs, and I'm literally wearing at least one of them every day because Vessis are so comfortable, they're easy to get on and off when I'm on the go, and they are super stylish. I love how they look. Plus, get this, they're also 100% waterproof. And I really turn to my Stormburst high tops when I'm ready for a bit more adventuring out and about. They are so versatile, though. I can wear them for everyday errands and getting things done, or taking them into the elements, from beach days to walking around the city to a rainy day hike. Elevate your spring wardrobe with Vessi's Stormburst shoes. Discover more at vessi.com/newsworthy. Get your pair today to get an automatic 15% off your first purchase at checkout and be ready to step out in style, rain or shine. Trust me, you will not regret this. Go to vessi.com/newsworthy to get your new favorite shoes with an automatic 15% off your first purchase at checkout. Today is Saturday, February 25th. It has now been 1 year since Russia first invaded Ukraine. So what's changed in that time? What's expected next? And what role does America's support play in all of it? Later, I'll speak with an analyst who has been tracking the war since the beginning. His research is focused on Eastern European and former Soviet Union countries. But first, we're getting a sense of the mood on the ground in Ukraine from an American volunteer and veteran who has been there to help. Dane Miller is now the chief logistics officer and director of operations for Volunteers for Ukraine, an American organization that has been providing humanitarian aid to Ukraine since last year. Dane spoke to me from neighboring Warsaw, Poland, about the conditions Ukrainian citizens are facing on a daily basis and why he says he finds them inspiring. Welcome, welcome to the Newsworthy Special Edition Saturday, when we sit down with a different expert or celebrity every Saturday to talk about something in the news. Don't forget to tune in every Monday through Friday for our regular episodes, where we provide all the day's news in 10 minutes. I'm Erica Mandy. It's now time for today's Special Edition Saturday. Dane Miller, thank you for coming on the Newsworthy.
Thank you for having me.
So when we're talking about the conditions on the ground right now, 1 year after Russia invaded, what is standing out the most to you or the volunteers that are there? What are they seeing? What are they experiencing at this point?
There's very consistent blackouts, some of them just no power whatsoever. And so this is something throughout the winter the average Ukrainian was facing. The cold, not being able to cook and clean and shower. We have missile strikes nearly every day that's targeting infrastructure as well as energy. And the Ukrainians are taking a silent stand, if you will, as citizens and saying, go ahead, try us. We're gonna endure this and we're going to be stronger for it. Seeing that sort of bravery, courage, endurance, and discipline to just hunker down and say, this is not going to faze me. It's very inspiring. And there's been a mass of Ukrainians that have come back and just stayed. There's this reinvigoration within the Ukrainian populations. It's like a bond that continues to tighten within the Ukrainian population to win this war. Like, they're going to see this through to the very end.
So the optimism is still there that I know we saw early on. It's still there, even really with no end in sight at this point.
It's still there and it looks different. So in the beginning, there's a lot of media attention. It was just more visible to the outside world. What's happened now, though, it's far more, the roots are deeper. Their mere existence is at stake. And so you see this entire culture banding together to like remind each other, like, this is who we are. This is where we come from. It's just profound. It's unshakable morale. It's definitely there. It's very much intact.
Any specific stories that really stand out to you from your time in Ukraine or from other volunteers and kind of that one-on-one interaction or anything that's really stood out?
Something that's near and dear to my own heart, having served in the United States military, is just helping service members. Part of what VFU has done is helped sponsor another NGO that has partnered to fly Ukrainians back to the United States to get fitted for prosthetics. There's actually a few groups that are doing this. And seeing the video content of those soldiers getting fitted for new prosthetics, they're already like walking and running, and some of them are coming back and going back and fighting. And I'm blown away by the, like, it's just profound. They're so brave and courageous, and it's stories that need to be told for sure.
What first personally motivated you to get involved with Volunteers for Ukraine?
I admittedly didn't know a whole lot about Eastern Europe. I spent my time in the Middle East as well as Southwest Asia and Afghanistan. And when the full-scale invasion began on February 24th of 2022, I was actually in Mexico sitting on a beach, and I had a cocktail in my hand, and I looked down at my phone and read that this was happening. And I just did this quick assessment in my head that one of the world's superpowers that has the most nuclear weapons in the world has just invaded another very large country, but one that's much smaller than Russia. And I just couldn't help but think about just the massive consequences of that. And I had a little bit of an understanding that places like Georgia and Chechnya and the Donbas and Crimea had all been occupied or invaded prior to that. And so just doing the linear evaluation, this looked very much like what happened during what initiated World War II, where a superpower continues to just invade, 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 and they don't stop and they keep going. And that really stuck out to me. And that's when I first mentally made that commitment to, I got to do something to help.
And just a final thought about this war, 1 year after the Russia invaded.
I have gotten to spend a lot of time in different places in Ukraine, and their stories are profound. Their resistance to this invasion is profound. There's just so much to be admired. They have a very strong sense of liberties within their country and a sense of strong culture and identity. Like, it's such a cool country. I can't wait to see what it looks like when the war has been won and they're able to rebuild. They're really, really great people.
Hundreds of thousands of soldiers and civilians are thought to have been killed or injured since the war broke out, according to some estimates. And UNICEF says more than 27 million more need humanitarian help right now. So how long can all of this go on? Still ahead, I'm speaking with Dalibor Rohash. He's a senior fellow at the American Enterprise Institute, which is a center-right think tank in Washington, D.C. He shares his take on whether Russia would really use nuclear weapons, plus what he thinks it will take to end the fighting and why the outcome impacts the United States. But first, we'll take a quick break to thank our sponsors. The Newsworthy is brought to you by Indeed. You almost never hear in the headlines that great leaders did everything on their own. And there's a reason for that. Great businesses have great teams. And to build a great team, you need Indeed. Indeed is the hiring platform where you can attract, interview, and hire all in one place. So don't spend hours on multiple job sites looking for candidates with the right skills when you can do it all with Indeed. Find top talent fast with Indeed's suite of powerful hiring tools like Indeed Instant Match, assessments, and virtual interviews. Hate waiting? Indeed's U.S. data shows over 80% of Indeed employers find quality candidates whose resume on Indeed matches their job description the moment they sponsor a job. I love when a platform makes things easy by providing everything you need in one place. Join over 3 million businesses worldwide using Indeed to hire great talent fast. Indeed knows hiring needs to be cost-effective when you're running your own business. So visit Indeed.com/newsworthy to start hiring now. Just go to Indeed.com/newsworthy. Indeed.com/newsworthy. Terms and conditions apply. Cost per application pricing not available for everyone. Need to hire? You need Indeed. And thank you to our other sponsor, Stitch Fix. Whether you want to totally refresh your wardrobe or just get a few fun new pieces for spring, you deserve the star treatment with your own personal stylist. Well, with Stitch Fix, you'll have access to real stylists who work with you to create or add to a wardrobe that is tailored just for you. All you have to do is answer a few questions about where you typically like to shop, what you like to wear, and your price range. And with your choices in mind and a wide range of sizes available, from extra small to 3XL, they'll find your perfect fit. I love that it saves me time and energy. Instead of having to browse endless websites for one thing I like that's also in my size, Stitch Fix already knows my style and price and size preferences and can show or send me some great options. I also appreciate that I tend to find things I might not have initially picked out, but still end up loving. Right now, Stitch Fix is offering my listeners $20 off their first Fix at stitchfix.com/newsworthy. That's stitchfix.com/newsworthy for $20 off today. stitchfix.com/newsworthy. All right, now to my conversation with American Enterprise Institute Senior Fellow, Dalibor Rohash. Dalibor Rohash, thank you so much for coming on The Newsworthy.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Erica.
So it has now been 1 year since Russia first invaded Ukraine. Can you tell us big picture where things stand right now?
Russia's military has been exposed as a rather hollow structure. At the same time, the Ukrainians have really outperformed expectations on every front. That is very disappointing for Vladimir Putin, who now has to paint the war as being a war against NATO, if you listen to his most recent speech, because the idea that tiny little Ukraine would defeat him in a land war, I mean, is rather embarrassing. Big picture question going forward is how this ends, right? And in my opinion, there is only one way to lasting peace, which is Russia's sound and clear defeat that would be acknowledged as such by the Russians themselves. Any scenario short of that, stalemates, frozen conflicts, sort of fatigue on both sides, would only prolong the conflict, would only give Russians the opportunity to rearm, rebuild, and attack again.
Did you think a year ago that Ukraine would last this long and beyond? Were you surprised, just like Russia?
I was surprised, I have to say, by the effectiveness of Ukrainian resistance. I anticipated that a full-fledged invasion would be a bloody affair. We did not fully appreciate at the time just the level of corruption and just institutional rot within the Russian military that made it a far less effective fighting force than Putin was trying to project for many years. At the same time, Ukrainians, for very good reason, were very cautious about, you know, sharing with the wider world just how good they were at rebuilding their own military and really preparing for this scenario.
Can you talk about the type of warfare that's going on? I know some of the latest reports have talked about trench warfare, harkening back to the days of World War I. What does that tell you? And then what's the next step forward for either side when it comes to this type of fighting?
So in some areas, you indeed have this sort of trench World War I style warfare where you have soldiers on either side in trenches, staying there for weeks, being supplied and launching sort of small-scale attacks and shelling, etc. Right now, what the main sort of story which is worth mentioning is the Russian offensive in the Donetsk around Bakhmut. They might end up taking Bakhmut, but they will take Bakhmut at an incredibly high cost. Western estimates of Russian losses are enormous, of the order of 1,000 troops per day. Unlike Ukrainians, Russian military hospitals and healthcare for their casualties, for their wounded ones, is in a much poorer shape. So the ratio of dead soldiers to the total casualties is much higher on the Russian side. So it really is a very brutal and a bloody affair.
And to that point, how long can this go on? And do you think there's any chance for a peaceful resolution?
I expect a peaceful resolution to come only once Russia is soundly defeated. We might be closer to that point than we anticipate. I mean, Russian reserves are very thin and consist of mostly ill-equipped, ill-trained recruits from the September wave of mobilization. Obviously, the Wagner group has been sort of scraping the bottoms of Russian prisons, trying to find manpower there. Ukrainian losses, by most accounts, seem significant too and would not be sustainable longer term, but which is why there is a certain degree of urgency in the West stepping in and providing Ukrainians with what they need. So really, the ball is now caught in the sense that the Ukrainians are preparing to launch an offensive later in the spring. I think that is pretty clear from all we know, and it's important that they have, you know, the Western tanks, the Leopards, the Abramses, the Challenger tanks, the high-precision long-range artillery and everything else. I'm pretty confident that they have what it takes to do the fighting.
So you're talking about the importance of that Western support, that Ukrainians need it to continue and eventually defeat Russia. A recent poll found that American support for continuing to send that aid to Ukraine has at least softened from, I think it was 60% in May of last year supporting it, to now 48%. What's your reaction to that? And should Americans care?
I do think that Americans should care. I mean, you know, that support has, as you said, eroded somewhat. You know, we could go through the moral reasons, the story of a small nation that's defending itself against an imperialist power, against the bully, against an aggressor. But for Americans, what matters most probably are, you know, not sentimental reasons, but questions of America's national interest. In a world in which Russia can get away with annexing chunks of territory of other countries and redrawing borders by force, I mean, that world is much more dangerous, including for Americans. I believe that it is very much in our national interest to really double down on our support, give Ukrainians what they need to finish the job.
One day after President Biden's recent surprise visit to Ukraine, Russia pulled out of its nuclear arms control pact with the U.S. So what does that mean? And should we really worry that Russia will use nuclear weapons if Putin feels like his back's against the wall?
On the narrow question of the SALT treaty, Russia was not complying with the terms of the deal for some time. Its participation in the treaty had more of a sort of symbolic value. I would argue that this is not as big a deal as Putin would like to make it sound like. The broader nuclear threat is obviously something that we need to take seriously and Western policymakers need to take seriously, but we also have to be clear-eyed about the nature of the threat. Putin likes to talk about how this war is a war against NATO, but it is clear that he doesn't want a war against NATO, and he's not threatening the use of strategic nuclear weapons against Western capitals or the United States or Western Europe. And he would, you know, first of all, possibly bring the world to an end and bring Russia's existence to an end by doing that. And, you know, he's many things. He is an awful dictator, but he's not suicidal. Could he use a low-yield tactical nuclear weapon in Ukraine? That remains a possibility. At the same time, it would not solve any of his problems. Russian forces can't really operate in an environment that's been sort of polluted by nuclear weapons. And it is very likely that this is precisely what would make the West just double down on its support to Ukraine, possibly even making NATO involvement in Ukraine on the front line possible in a more direct way than we've seen thus far.
Well, thank you so much to both of our guests today. For more information about how to get involved with humanitarian efforts, you can connect with volunteers for Ukraine on their website and social media accounts. And for more analysis from Dalibor Rohosh, check out his profile page on the American Enterprise Institute's website. We have links in our show notes. We'll, of course, continue to bring you updates about Russia's war on Ukraine and other news to know each weekday with our 10-minute daily news roundups. So we'll be back on Monday. Until then, have a great weekend.